Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. A lot of movies to talk about this week, and John Ornes, the director of the Oscar-nominated documentary Collective, Conversation with the Director, coming up later. I'm joined this week by critics Angie Hahn, deputy editor of Mashable, and Wade Major of Synagogues.com. We begin with Mortal Kombat, the action film, which is streaming on HBO Max and in wide theatrical release. Louis Tan and Jessica McNamee star. Simon McCoy is the director, and Greg Russo, Dave Callahan, and Oren Uziel are the screenwriters. Angie, what'd you think of Mortal Kombat?
It's very silly, but also self-aware about it, which makes it enjoyable for what it is. I wasn't a big fan of the video games going in, so I didn't catch a lot of the references. So I think some of its charm may be lost on me. But I enjoyed it just as the kind of movie where, for example, the villain will stab someone, blood will spurt out, he'll freeze that and turn that into a knife and then turn around and stab the guy back. I think to me, the weakest part probably was it's built around a character that is original to this movie. He's not from the games, and he is probably the least interesting character in it. Everyone around him is a little bit more colorful, but overall, it's not an incredible movie, but it's great if you just want to put something on and just kind of cackle at the ridiculousness of it all.
We're talking about Mortal Kombat, the action film. Wade, what did you think?
It is not high art. I think a lot of people are sort of judging it as if it should be like Neo Kurosawa. But we got to remember, it's based on a video game. What I think is very smart about this is what Angie just pointed out. The central character here, played by Louis Tan, is written for this film. Because I think they realized after the 1995 film, which came out more or less in the shadow of the video game, 92 is the video game, 95 was the first film, that now we have nostalgia that we're working with. We're not going after an audience that is actively playing this game. We're going after an audience that played the game or that remembers it. So by introducing Louis Tan as a new dramatic figure, they're able to sort of wrap the rest of the game artifacts and all of the very referential Easter eggs that are poked in this thing. They're sort of able to make that into a more coherent and cohesive story. The idea here is basically the same. There are these two realms. There's Outworld and there's Earth. And they have these tournaments every year. And Outworld has won 9 in a row. And if they win a 10th, they get to take over Earth. So we've got to win this one. You know, you introduce all of the eccentric characters and the fighters, and you have a pretty good time of it. There were a few things where I think they probably didn't pay it off quite as well as they were hoping to from the nostalgia standpoint. But apart from, you know, Robin Shu, who played Liu Kang in the original, who I think is a better Liu Kang than what Ludi Lin plays here, I think they did a really good job. They've taken parts like Lord Raiden, which was originally played by Christopher Lambert, is now played by Tadanobu Asana. You know, they're unafraid of casting Asian actors in these parts as opposed to what actor is available just generally. So I think they've crossed a threshold there. It's got higher production value. It's not afraid to be R-rated. So on balance, yeah, it's silly, but it's a lot of fun.
We should mention that our Film Week and Air Talk producer, Matt D'Angelo-Antonio, who played Mortal Kombat, was a huge fan of this. So if you're a fan of Mortal Kombat, the game, you might well enjoy this particularly. Mortal Kombat, the film is rated R on HBO Max and in wide theatrical release. 4 Good Days, drama starring Mila Kunis, Glenn Close, and Stephen Root. Rodrigo Garcia is the director and co-screenwriter with Eli Saslow. Angie, what'd you think of 4 Good Days?
It is a couple of good performances in a movie that feels like we have seen it 1,000 times before, including recently in films like that Timothy Chalamet one, Beautiful Boy. So Glenn Close plays the mom and Mila Kunis is the daughter. Mila Kunis is a heroin addict who's just been off and on in and out of recovery for like a decade or more. And she shows up at her mom's house saying, like, you know, no, it's real this time. I want to get clean, et cetera, et cetera. And she has already been sober for a few days. So she goes to the doctor and they tell her if you can stay sober for like 4 more days, hence the 4 good days, then she can get a shot that blocks the high that she would get from shooting up heroin, which would help her to stay sober. So it's the story of what happens over those 4 days as she struggles to try to stay clean for that long. And it's really heartbreaking and moving in parts. I think one of the most striking, saddest parts is in the beginning when Mila Kunis first shows up and she's begging her mom for help. But Glenn Close, her character, has been through this so many times before. And you see how hard it is for her to muster up the kind of heartlessness that she needs in order for herself to survive in trying to push out this daughter and tell her, like, I can't help you. I can't be dragged down with you with this again. And Mila Kunis, I think, especially does really good work in this. It's a role that I think that feels different from a lot of the other stuff we've seen her in, where usually her kind of liveliness and her zest for life is what takes center stage. So I give her a lot of credit for that. But that said, the beats of this feel so predictable. It just feels like at the end of it, I felt like, okay, that was a good acting showcase for these two actors. Good job. I don't really know what I got from this or learned from it that I didn't already know from watching a million other movies like this.
4 Good Days, the drama starring Mila Kunis and Glenn Close. Wade.
Yeah, I would also add that the Timothy Chalamet Beautiful Boy movie came out within weeks of another movie with the exact same plot, which was Ben Is Back with Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges, directed by Lucas's dad, Peter Hedges. So even that year, we had this story being told repeatedly. Yeah, it is a familiar narrative. Unfortunately, it's a familiar narrative in life. And I think we all know scenarios that have followed these beats. It's based on a true story. How much embellishment, we don't really know. But, you know, you are watching this primarily for the performances. Director Rodrigo Garcia, who also co-wrote it with the author of the Eli Saslow, who wrote the original article, previously directed Glenn Close and Albert Nobbs, also did a very fine film called 9 Lives. So he, you know, he's got a handle on the drama. He has a handle on the performances. And I think this is definitely the greatest risk that Mila Kunis has ever taken as an actress. So for whatever its familiarity, I'm willing to forgive a lot of that just because the performances are so good. And you know, it's nice to see Glenn Close do something other than debut after Sunday's Oscar show. So it's nice to see her back in the saddle and doing the thing that she does so well.
4 Good Days in wide release is rated R. Tom Clancy's Without Remorse, action-adventure film starring Michael B. Jordan, Jodie Turner-Smith, and Jamie Bell. Stefano Solima is the director, and Taylor Sheridan wrote the screenplay with Will Staples, based, of course, on a Tom Clancy novel. Wade, what did you think of Clancy's Without Remorse?
Boy, I really wanted to like this more than I did. It feels kind of like a movie salvaged from the early 90s. The book, by the way, is substantially seedier and more difficult than what is portrayed here. They really kind of changed the story and the character and rearranged it and really stripped out a lot of superfluous stuff. They want to take the character of John Clark, the famous Navy SEAL created by Tom Clancy, and turn him into a real franchise figure. They want to kind of launch a whole new Clancy franchise. So they've really cleaned him up, taken away the seamier aspects of the character, and they want Michael B. Jordan to be that action star going forward. And what's a little sad about this is that Michael B. Jordan is a really extraordinary actor. He's more than just a guy with a really chiseled action star body. He has talent to go with that, and they're playing to his body, but not to his talent in this case. And I felt like, okay, you know, we've seen the revenge story before. We've seen the guys on a mission, you know, to extract someone from behind enemy lines story before. The original story takes place around in the shadow of the Vietnam War. So they've updated this one for, you know, present day geopolitics. But it still feels like a story lost in time.
Tom Clancy's Without Remorse, Angie.
Yeah, I mean, to Wade's point, it's clear that they want to set up a sequel. There's even a post-credit scene, like it's in a Marvel movie or something, that is trying to establish what's going to happen next. But I can't imagine wanting a sequel to this after watching this. I didn't know that Michael B. Jordan could be so charmless and so boring. He does look good physically. He has, you know, a big fight scene where he's shirtless and you're like, okay, yeah, he looks every part the action star. But he is just, he's charmless. He's just kind of a black hole of personality. I wouldn't even say his dramatic acting is very good in this. This is maybe the worst I've ever seen him in, which is so disappointing to me because I'm such a big fan of him. It's an action movie that just feels like it's half-heartedly going through the motions of what you think this movie is going to be, but with no sense of style, no sense of perspective or personality or like anything to it other than just let's just follow the beats. The dialogue is flat. The plotting is also flat. The story is like your standard thriller, but all the big twists feel kind of telegraphed in advance. And the action isn't even that good. At one point, there's a fight in a jail cell where Michael B. Jordan prepares by filling up the jail cell with water. So I was like, oh, great. Okay, he's going to use the slipperiness as like a weapon when he's doing hand-to-hand combat with them, but he doesn't. It just ends up being a regular fight scene, only everyone is wet for no reason. So to me, that's the film in a nutshell. It's just, you keep thinking, okay, maybe, and then it just returns to you with like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go the boring route.
Tom Clancy's Without Remorse is streaming on Amazon Prime Video. It's rated R. Limbo is a film from the United Kingdom, and it stars Amir El-Masri and Vikash Bai. The film is written and directed by Ben Sherrick. Angie, what do you think of Limbo?
I was a big fan of this one. It centers on Omar, who is a Syrian refugee who ends up in this remote little town in Scotland waiting to see if his request for asylum will be granted. And early on in the opening scene, it has a slightly absurdist edge. It almost reminded me of something like The Lobster, because you have a bunch of male refugees sitting in this class that's meant to teach them about cultural norms, where this very awkward woman and man are playing out some fictional scenario to teach these men basically don't grope a woman in a nightclub. So that part is a little bit funny, a little bit off, but the meat of the film is really quite poignant. He is separated from his family and feeling increasingly isolated and depressed and desperate as he's stuck on this island where he doesn't know anyone, where he doesn't know if he'll ever be able to leave or when. He's sort of friends with some of the other refugees who are also really interesting characters, but what really comes through is a sense of his loneliness and depression. And the absurdity ends up being a way to show you how surreal and strange this whole situation must feel for him to just be stuck on this completely other country where he doesn't know anyone, where he doesn't know anything that's going on. And it's a film that acknowledges, frankly, how hard this is for him, up to and including acknowledging that a lot of the townspeople don't even like the refugees there. They're not very nice to them all the time. But it's not one that dwells on his misery for the sake of it. I think the film really finds moments of grace and levity and unexpected beauty, too. And El-Masri just does such incredible work as Omar. You can see how the character feels just from the way he carries himself. So without underplaying how serious the situation is in Syria, it's a film that shows you a different side of the story.
Limbo, the drama from the United Kingdom. Wait, what'd you think?
I think Angie pretty much nailed it. It's a really fascinating, curious little oddity. You know, it has an absurdist character to it that's a little bit similar to Aki Kaurismäki, the Finnish filmmaker, and some of the very peculiar films that he makes. It has that sort where everything sort of sits there in the frame. You know, Wes Anderson does a little bit of that here. Things sit in the frame and you sort of acclimate yourself to the little miniature world that they're creating in front of you, where no one quite moves normally, no one quite speaks normally, but you acclimate yourself to the cadence of it and to the how unusual this is. And eventually what you find is not really an absurd world, but a really very charming world. And that is, again, all because of Amir El-Masri, who gives such a wonderfully nuanced performance here. I mean, they play against a lot of these stereotypes, not just the stereotypes of the refugees, but the stereotypes of the Scottish, where, for example, you know, a carload full of Scottish kids show up and start really berating poor El-Masri and saying, you know, are you a terrorist? Are you here? And next thing you know, he's in the car with them and they're doing donuts in the middle of the wilderness. It finds a really unusual cross-cultural charm. And that's a very difficult tightrope walk, but they manage it.
We're talking about Limbo, starring Amir El-Masri, written and directed by Ben Sherrick. The film is rated R, and you can see Limbo in wide release. Coming up, Angie and Wade will tell us about the thriller Things Heard and Seen, which takes us to the Hudson Valley and some strange things happening in a marriage. Also, The County, which is a European film set in Iceland, and Percy versus Goliath, a Canadian drama that's out this week as well. So a number of international films that are in release. We're seeing more theaters, of course, opening up. Many of the films we're talking about are on the big screen. Others you can see in your home via screening services or on-demand platforms. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC, the KPCC app, and also available wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up later this hour, our John Horn talks with the director of the Oscar-nominated Documentary Collective. You're listening to Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Wade Major and Angie Hahn. Next up is the thriller Things Heard and Seen, set in the Hudson Valley of New York. Amanda Seyfried, James Norton, and Natalia Dyer star. Sherry Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini are the writer-directors of the film. Things Heard and Seen. Wade, please start us.
Yeah, it's one of two haunted house movies that we have this week, and our second Oscar nominee from Sunday, coming back, Amanda Seyfried. She and James Norton are a couple. He's an up and coming young professor. It takes place in the 80s. They go. He gets a position upstate New York. They move into this old house, and of course, there's a history to the old house, and there's also a history to him and their relationship. And she has an eating disorder. And he's not quite the guy he appears to be, and things eventually take some rather nasty turns with some supernatural intercession. So I'm not going to give anything else away. I think that sets the stage for what's going on here. This is written and directed by Shari Springer Berman and Robert Pulcini, based on a novel called All Things Cease to Appear. And Berman and Pulcini have not really recaptured their moment since they made American Splendor in 2003, which was hugely acclaimed. And they've been kind of chasing that moment ever since. And this is a very well-made film. I mean, it's an incredibly well-crafted film. It's beautiful filmmaking. I can't fault them on that. But it's still a haunted house story that we've seen before. And the revelations aren't really that much of a revelation, and the scares and the chills aren't that scary or that chilling. And as well crafted as it is, I just kind of feel like it's the wrong vehicle for all of that artistry.
Things Heard and Seen. Angie, were you more scared than Wade?
I was not. So in the beginning of the movie, when they move in, the husband is just, they're looking at the house, and it's a little bit of a fixer-upper, but he's like, it's got good bones. But then, of course, things don't end up so well for them with the house. And that's kind of how I felt about this movie. It's got good bones. You could build something good here. It's got strong performances from Seyfried and Norton. I thought the production design was really good. It felt so lived in. It's got a great cast of supporting characters, including Rhea Seehorn and F. Murray Abraham. And the larger themes that it's trying to explore, if you squint, you can kind of see what they're going for. And yeah, sure, I give them credit for trying to do something. But then the movie itself just ends up so blah. One movie it brought to mind for me was Invisible Man, which came out last year and was a movie where the kind of supernatural sci-fi element worked to really enhance the story it was telling about this relationship between Elizabeth Moss and her husband in that movie. And in this movie, it's the supernatural element kind of doesn't do anything to deepen it. You can kind of see what they're going for. And I read a little bit about the book, and it sounds like the book maybe goes a little bit more into it. The book it's based on, I mean. But in this movie, it just kind of feels, it felt to me like you can have this domestic drama without having to add ghosts into the mix that don't really do anything. They're kind of useless as ghosts, both in the narrative and like as part of the movie. And then it builds to an ending that's a real WTF, but not in a way it feels earned. It's not a satisfying movie.
All right. Things Heard and Seen is unrated. It's streaming on Netflix, starring Amanda Seyfried, James Norton, and Natalia Dyer. The County, an Icelandic film written and directed by Grímur Hákonarson. Angie, what'd you think of The County?
this one. It's in the vein of something like Erin Brockovich in the sense that it's this David and Goliath determined woman standing up to the system story. So it centers around this Icelandic farmer named Inga who's recently been widowed. And as she's kind of trying to figure out what to do with the farm after her husband dies, she starts to realize just how corrupt the local co-op, which runs the community, is. And she starts to try to stand up for that. She starts to try to stand up against them, I mean. And I got a little bit of like a Three Billboards vibe from this one, not least because the lead actor, apologies for not knowing how to say her name quite correctly, but I think it's Arndis Tronegildsdottir. She resembles Frances McDormand a bit and also shares some of the same no-nonsense, what have I got to lose, you do not want to mess with her energy, but it's less angry and not trying as hard to be funny. It feels very lived in. I'm not an Icelandic farmer, so I can't say how accurate it is in its portrayal. But to me, an outsider, it feels like it knows what it's doing. It feels like you are really just dropped in this community. I mean, the first scene is her birthing a calf, or is that the correct term?
Delivering a calf, I assume, yeah.
Yes, no, that's the correct term. But right off the bat, you just feel like, oh, okay, you've really just been dropped all the way into this world. And I think as a result, it makes you really feel for her, even though as a story, it's not trying to be as kind of sentimental, rah-rah, uplifting as some of these other fighting the system films are. So it's a small but mighty movie and one that I found satisfying.
And it's a mix of comedy and drama, or more on the drama side, would you say?
It's more on the drama side, although there are occasional bits of comedy, but I would classify it as more of a drama.
The County is the film from Iceland, written and directed by Grimmer Hakonarsson. The film is unrated, and you can see it via Lemley's Virtual Cinema. Percy versus Goliath, a Canadian film about a farmer taking on a giant corporation. It stars Christopher Walken, Christina Ricci, and Zach Braff. Clark Johnson is the director, and the screenplay written by Garfield, Lindsay Miller, and Hilary Pryor. Wade, what'd you think of Percy versus Goliath?
I'm going to give our listeners an incredible sense of deja vu. So here's a movie about a farmer. It's David and Goliath. It's like Erin Brockovich. It sounds basically like the movie that Angie just described. It's effectively almost the same kind of a thing. This is actually based on a true story that took place in 1997 in Saskatchewan, even though the movie is shot in Manitoba next door, which I assume must create all kinds of friction in Canada. But it's the true story of Percy Schmeisser, who was a Canadian farmer who was Monsanto tried to bankrupt him. Because they claimed that he was exploiting, that he was infringing on a seed patent. I didn't even know you could patent seeds, but apparently you can patent the genetics of seeds, and they have a seed that was resistant to Roundup. And there are all kinds of reasons for how and why this transpired, but he, being a feisty guy, Schmeisser said, no, I'm not going to cave in. I'm going to take this, you know, young, plucky attorney, and we're going to go all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, and we're going to fight this. We usually see this story not even in environmental things. It's usually, you know, death row convictions, you know, the wrongly accused, wrongly convicted. I mean, any kind of miscarriage of justice story where there's a plucky attorney and a downtrodden person who are going to take on the system, that's basically this story. So we've seen it before. We know exactly where it's going to go. We know all the beats of this story. But the reason we're watching is because Christopher Walken has not been this good in ages. He usually plays kind of a really odd variation on his persona and exploits that. Here, he's really going for a character again for the first time in a very long time. And it's so beautiful. It's so poetic. It's so understated. Nice to see Christina Ricci show up again as an activist who comes to kind of help him out. Zach Braff is great as his attorney, just funny enough, just serious enough. So even though you know all the beats of this story, you're really hanging on to these performances, and it's just so great to see these actors doing such good work.
Percy versus Goliath is rated PG-13, and you can see it in Pasadena at Lemley's Playhouse 7 Theater. The comedy Eat Wheaties is written and directed by Scott Abramovich in his feature directorial debut. Tony Hale stars in the film. Angie, what'd you think of Eat Wheaties?
I was not a huge fan of this one, but it's not without its charm. So Tony Hale plays this guy named Sid Straw, who has been selected to organize his college reunion, and he gets very excited because he remembers that in college he was friends with Elizabeth Banks. And it becomes a whole thing where his day-to-day life is not terrible, but kind of just, you know, blah. He's working in a boring office job. He's single. He seems kind of lonely. So it becomes this thing that he fixates on of like, oh, Elizabeth Banks and I used to be friends. I'm going to invite her to the college reunion. It's going to be a whole thing. A lot of people don't even believe that he actually knows her, because why would they? And then his whole life kind of unravels as a result. And Tony Hale is always has this inherent kind of sweetness to him. So I think that makes it easy to root for Sid Straw in a lot of ways. You do want to be on his side. There's some pretty funny stuff here because it's got a great cast. Lamorne Morris, who I love from New Girl, was a highlight for me. Paul Walter Hauser is another great person, another great comedic performance in this movie. But I think that the humor makes me feel it becomes funny and also a little bit sentimental in a way that I think makes me think the film doesn't understand how dark and disturbing the premise really is, because it starts to become, when you look at it from another angle, it's a story of a guy sort of stalking this celebrity that he claims to know. And the movie seems to think that the problem is that we're not understanding enough of the fact that, you know, like the movie seems to think that the problem is that society takes cyberbullying too seriously and gives out restraining orders too easily. And so, yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
Eat Wheaties, Wade.
I'm just sitting here laughing. I think Andrew really kind of nailed all the points. This is one of those movies where you watch it and 1 minute you're laughing hilariously, and the next minute you kind of go, ooh, it's very uncomfortable. And then it's funny again, and then it's uncomfortable, and then it's funny, and then it's uncomfortable. And I don't necessarily enjoy being kind of jerked around that way, but eventually, as uncomfortable and sort of icky as this movie was at the outset, it does win you over. And I think that's entirely Tony Hale. I mean, he's won 2 Emmys for Veep for doing just that, for being a guy who can kind of help you swallow uncomfortable emotions. You know, he's the sugar or the honey that makes the medicine go down a little more easily. And it's a very tricky performance that he gives here. You do have to kind of pinch yourself sometimes and say, this guy's not quite stable. He's not quite right, and you shouldn't really be rooting for what he's doing. But nonetheless, you do feel like he's a victim of circumstance. And so there is something that is both sympathetic about him, but something that really does sort of get what he deserves. And I'm not sure if that's what they were going for, but that's kind of what they wound up with. So, yeah, I don't quite know how I feel about it. I wouldn't watch it again, but it does have its charms.
Eat Wheaties, rated PG-13. It's at the Arena Cine Lounge in Hollywood and on multiple on-demand platforms. The Virtuoso stars Anthony Hopkins, Anson Mount, and Abby Cornish. Nick Stagliano is the director and James C. Wolfe the screenwriter. Wade.
So I haven't decided if this is a really cerebral version of John Wick or a more commercial variation on Jean-Pierre Melville's Le Samurai. It kind of sits somewhere between. Anson Mount, who has been best known lately for playing Christopher Pike on Star Trek on television, plays a professional hitman who gets his assignments from Oscar winner Anthony Hopkins, who probably worked for a day in this. And Anthony Hopkins is kind of just a broker. He sits there with, you know, a lineup of cell phones on his desk, and he sort of doles out work to his various assassin clients. And after a particular job, a very hastily organized job, goes very badly awry with some collateral damage, the soul of this assassin kind of starts to come through. And then he gets another assignment that's very, very risky. But it's also very cryptic. He's not quite sure whom he's supposed to assassinate. And then you get into this very interesting cat and mouse game with a collection of characters who all show up in a small diner in this rural town. And you're not quite sure who's on the level, who isn't, who's lying, who isn't. And the way, you know, the film is he has this inner monologue that narrates the film, where it's what's going through his head as he goes through the process of being very, very methodical and meticulous. And that's what's really interesting, is that you're hearing that internal monologue throughout the entire film. So you feel very close to how calloused he is and how his humanity is kind of coming to the fore. And where it eventually goes is again, unfortunately, this is a theme on today's show. It's rather predictable, but getting there is kind of fun. So I'm sorry that it doesn't really wrap up in a more original and more inventive way. But I really did kind of enjoy watching it until it got there.
The Virtuoso, rated R. The film is in select theaters and multiple on-demand platforms. Angie, tell us about the comedy Golden Arm. We have just about a minute left.
Golden Arm stars Mary Holland, who was a scene stealer in Happiest Season, as this wimpy baker whose best friend drags her into the world of competitive arm wrestling and discovers that she's a natural talent. It's a film that I liked with some reservations. The cast, including Holland, Betsy Sodaro, Eugene Cordero, Ron Funches, is fantastic. They're fun, they're game, they're up for anything. It's also fun to get sucked in this world of competitive female arm wrestling, which is certainly not something we've seen in a ton of films. It does feel like something's a little bit missing. It doesn't seem to quite know where it wants to strike the balance between down to earth and over the top, or self-aware versus sincere, so it makes the film feel a little bit more timid than maybe it should. But that said, I mean, it's a nice, cute watch. It's just 90 breezy minutes of comic actors that you have probably liked and seen in other things having fun together. So, yeah.
Golden Arm is directed by Maureen Barucha, and Anne-Marie Allison and Jenna Milley are the screenwriters. Mary Holland, Betsy Sodaro star in Golden Arm, the unrated film at Lemley's NoHo 7 in North Hollywood and on multiple on-demand platforms. Our Film Week critics this week, Angie Hahn and Wade Major. Stay tuned. Coming up next, our John Horn in conversation with Alexander Nanau, the director of the Oscar-nominated documentary Collective.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.